The jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
And this is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today. It is Friday, December 11th, 2015. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios located here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania, where we are heard live every weeknight. That is Monday through Friday from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Global Star Radio Network. Folks, that is the place to be, the Global Star Radio Network. Really the voice, the network of freedom, the network of truth. We're also simulcast on Blog Talk Radio. You can watch us live on our YouTube channel as well. Links to each audio and video venue can be found at our home base on the internet at HagmanandHagman.com. I'm Doug Hagman at the helm with fellow investigator, researcher, most importantly my son, Joe Hagman. Together we are the Hagman and Hagman Report, as I like to say. And of course, you know, we do dig deep into topics that the corporate mass media won't, will never do, of course. Many people adhere to the coincidence theory of historical and current geopolitical events. We don't. We look at the conspiratorial aspect, awakening others to the truth and the real news behind the headlines. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a great show for you planned for tonight. We are working on getting all of our guests on. We do have Steve Quayle with us. Before we go to Steve, I just want to say portions of tonight's broadcast are brought to you by HealthMasters.com. HealthMasters.com, as well as AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Two luminary businesses, Christian-owned businesses. HealthMasters, of course, providing you with nutritional products as well as information. Visit HealthMasters.com there. Sign up for their free newsletter. And, of course, American Survival Wholesale, because the time is short. Folks, the time is so short. I want to mention that I'm so excited because in front of me, for the people watching live on YouTube, in front of me is our very own copy of Empire Beneath the Ice, How the Nazis Won World War II, authored by Mr. Steve Quayle. Now, I had a chance to break open the book, and let me tell you something. This perhaps is Mr. Quayle's most important work. And I say Mr. Quayle because after reading this book, oh my goodness, you know, I thought I knew after reading Peter Lavenda and his series about the rat lines and the Nazi Hitler legacy and such. I thought I knew everything. Not even close. Empire Beneath the Ice, folks. Look, Christmas gift for the significant other, please. We're family. You can't go wrong. That's Empire Beneath the Ice, How the Nazis Won World War II. Steve Quayle is going to be on with us, as well as Mr. Gene Tatum. Mr. Gene Tatum is a Vietnam Special Forces Air Combat, or was a Vietnam Special Forces Air Combat Controller, 25-year CIA deep cover agent, U.S. Army pilot flying classified missions during the U.S. invasion of Grenada, Iran-Contra pilot flying cocaine shipments labeled as medical supplies. That's right, you heard that right. And a member of the ultra-secret international G7-run Pegasus hit team. This is really an extraordinary man, an extraordinary missions, and he's run everything from sensitive, highly secretive, and really largely unknown special forces covert operations in Cambodia to becoming a wandering CIA asset, and through on to black ops activities in Grenada, and of course working under Oliver North's Iran-Contra enterprise. He is the ultimate insider of black ops. Mr. Quayle is on with us. Mr. Tatum is on with us. I'm going to turn this over directly to Mr. Steve Quayle. Steve, thank you for doing this program.
Well, thank you, and it's my pleasure to do a full 3 hours with Gene Chip Tatum. Again, I've known.
Not getting up. Yeah.
Oh, are you guys kidding me?
There we go.
Now we are, sir.
Okay, and Chip is on.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I am. Pleasure to be on.
Okay.
Folks.
Hey, thank you, Chip. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to have on, to be able to, and thanks, Doug, for letting me interview Gene. I basically lost track of him after interviewing him almost 15 years ago extensively. And knowing what he knows and watching his life play out, I think he's been brought back into the mainstream for a reason. And when someone knows where all the skeletons are buried, it makes a lot of people nervous. And when he basically had his testimony implicating serving and former presidents plus a whole list of high government officials and others in a welter of nefarious activities, which include assassination, blackmail, coercion, gun running, money laundering, and cocaine trafficking. Gee, it just sounds like our State Department. And I think it's going to be interesting for you to hear Chip, and I'm going to call him Chip because that's what I know him. Hey, Gene, when I get something locked into my brain, I always refer to you as what I first interviewed you as. So is that okay with your permission? May I call you that?
Chip is fine.
Okay. Well, here's a first question I want you to deal with, and then you can go wherever you know, what's most important tonight. Now, would you just tell the people, you left the country, what, about 3 weeks ago, or was it a month ago?
I guess the 17th, I left the country.
Okay.
Through South Florida at the airport, and was detained
right
there.
So you were detained this time when you were getting out?
Yes, I'm always detained. Apparently there's an exception they have to get on the no-fly list for me to leave the country. And that comes because years ago when I left the country, while I was on supervised release following the release from prison for treason, they kept me on supervised release for 5 years, and I said, ah, heck with this, I'm leaving. And I left, and they couldn't. They saw that where I left through Fort Lauderdale, went to the Bahamas, and then I disappeared. I lived in South America for 10 years, where I am now. This is my home, away from home. Of course, I have my house in Florida still. But from my last episode, traveling back and forth might be just a little bit dangerous after what had happened in Miami.
What made, and if you don't mind, and you know you're free to answer anything but nothing that would, you know, help anybody do any damage to you, but what are they most nervous about right now? Still the skeletons or your insight as to the lateness of the hour? And let's face it, is it safe to say that our government is a world-class criminal enterprise that most people are naively unaware of?
It's more than safe to say, it's a fact. And I worked for that criminal enterprise. Look, the same oligarchy that was in play when I was active is still there. The Bushes, the Clintons, it's the same players. And for anyone to think that times have changed and things are going to get better, they just are not if you keep these players in play.
How can this country, knowing Hillary's crimes, knowing Hillary's lies, the pathological nature of denial and the damning nature of those who want to destroy the country through their oligarchy, as you see this from an insider's standpoint, what is the most astonishing thing to you now, and you're out, obviously, the country, you're looking in, but as things progress right now, we'll deal with everything, hopefully everything, we'll deal with what we can in 3 hours, but what is the most striking, if you will, perception of yours now as you see this theater of the absurd in the political arena play out?
How far they were able to degrade the Constitution and the rights of the people in the United States of America. That is the most damning thing that I've seen, and that thing that has progressed the most through their false flag operations and other entities and new laws passed. It's not the same country. It just is not the same country. If you were inside, born and raised under those laws, under that flag, and then left, and you're looking in, you see a completely different country.
You when we were talking, I think it was off the radio, a couple weeks ago or whatever, shortly before you left, and you didn't have much time. I think the fascinating thing that we were talking about is just the incredulous nature of this criminal regime releasing 5,000 hardened criminals, gangbangers, and everybody that absolutely are, if you will, the float scum of society, and yet now the vilification of gun owners, of Christians, of constitutionals, everything, it's accelerating. How soon do you see the coming civil war in the United States?
You know, it's not only 5,000 now. By February next year, it can be up to 40,000 of those gangbangers and drug kingpins being released into the streets of America with no way to support themselves, falling under what they call the federal supervised release program, which I walked away, got on a plane, and flew out while I was on it. They are so overburdened, this United States Probation Office, that they can't keep up with these people. You know, I was visited two or three times in 2 years. So you just file reports online. You just go online, file your report. They don't know where that report came from. You can spoof your IP and do whatever. But, you know, I don't know that these gangbangers are that swift. But let me tell you, while they were in prison, they learned. Prison is a university now. It's a university where they all get together, they figure out what they did wrong to get caught, and so they improve those skills and plan on when they get out, they plan on improving those skills and hitting the streets. Now, President Obama is releasing an army into the streets. And with the Blackish Revolution going on right now, and that's what I'll call it. There's a program on TV called Blackish. With the Blackish Revolution going on now in the streets, the police are afraid, National Guards are afraid, politicians are afraid. They all have fears of confronting these groups, and now they have these 30,000 armed warriors coming out, 30,000, 40,000 armed warriors coming into the streets. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. The other issue I see that has surprised me is the degradation of morals. I absolutely can't believe the degradation of morals that has been brought into the country. I can legally marry my German Shepherd now. Come on. What's that all about?
Well, again, as things progress, will you just share how the typical black ops prepositions weapons and kind of, if you will, I'll call it the death line, not the lifeline, but how with everything that's been, quote, budgeted, you know, you've watched the stories, billions of rounds of ammo, obviously every government agency that doesn't need weapons being outfitted with state-of-the-art sniper weapons, you know, literally billions of ammo, military, what were secret ammo dumps for the warriors should we have been invaded. Just explain to people how that works in the black world, because I think people, you know, when they see all this nonsense about, even though that it was real, Fast and Furious and gun running, they have no idea how it's really done in the background. Will you just walk us through that? Because I think that's critical. I mean, the bottom line is these guys aren't going, you know, with handguns and, you know, basic AR-15s. They've got access to everything. So will you just walk the listeners through that? Because I don't think, to my knowledge, I've ever heard anybody with your background, your expertise, and that's not flattery, it's just the truth, explain to people how when you are going to basically take over a nation, all that stuff's pre-positioned, and then the scum of society is released. So the exploitation of all these really heavy prisoners, walk us through that, if you would.
Well, in every major excursion the military has, we usually dump tons of ammunition, weapons, both high-yield weapons, small arms, heavy weapons, this equipment is put into the area of operations. Once we decide that we're going to leave that area, those weapons are supposedly turned over to the country in which we basically raided. However, in special operations, we would normally pick and choose which of those weapons we want before they were addressed over to that receiving country, and so we would warehouse those weapons. Now, there's a wonderful little place in Texas where those weapons are warehoused. There's five other places around the world where we actually warehouse those weapons. So, as we warehouse those weapons, we have this huge stockpile of weapons, and I'm going to tell you now, we even have some nuclear weapons that we were able to stockpile, some tactical weapons out of the Ukraine. When it fell, it moved across to Israel. Israel passed them on over to us. So there's huge stockpiles of weapons around the world that we in Black Ops have access to. Most recently, the Navy has called about 5 years ago, they initiated a program called the Project. And under the Project, these high-yield weapons, AK-47s, under the Project, they're normally foreign weapons, and they're stockpiled here in the United States. As a matter of fact, there was just recently a court case where the head of naval operations in this special contracting section for Black Ops purchased 349 silencers, high-velocity silencers, AK-47s that were put in place here in the States. Now, the Navy says in their SEPA briefing when these guys were prosecuted that they destroyed those, but they didn't destroy them. They just moved them. They're not going to destroy those weapons. Those weapons are being planned to use, you know, what do you need silencers on AK-47s for? You don't. You know, they're too large of a weapon. They're a good weapon. I mean, they're a heck of a lot better than the M16. But we have other weapons that are much more advanced than that now. So those weapons, I would assume that those weapons were to be used with those silencers within the boundaries of the United States of America. I have to assume that because of the cover-ups that have been going on and the statements of the judge and not permitting anything to be talked about in defense of these naval officers that were rammed through a federal court case, found guilty by a jury, and you're going to be found guilty by a jury, folks, when you go to federal court, because as a juror in a federal court, you're brought into this huge conference room, and there you have the state attorney, or you have the U.S. attorney, you have the FBI, you have the DEA, all these guys in suits and uniforms standing up there that represent law enforcement out of the fusion centers, and they put on this wonderful video that you watch about how it's your responsibility to keep the streets safe, and the U.S. attorney will explain to the people, the prospective jurors, that it's their position now. These people are here because there was sufficient evidence to find that they broke the law, and it's just they're going to hear the evidence for that, and we ask you to find them guilty. You know, that's the defense doesn't get to talk to those prospective jurors in a conference like that. Only the U.S. Attorney's Office. So the stage is set from the beginning against whoever has these federal charges filed against them. And these particular high-ranking officials ran a black ops program. Now, in the black ops programs, if you ask Congress for funding, and the law is when you need to run a black ops, you have to ask your congressional subcommittees, intelligence committees, for permission to run this op, and fund the op and arm the op. But if you ask them, and they can't keep a secret, so you tell them what you want to do and how much money you need, you're going to go to their sponsors, whoever it is, and then they're going to make their play and it's going to cost American lives because they can't keep a secret. So in Black Ops, we funded, in the old days, I can't say about now, but I imagine it's the same, we were able to fund our Black Ops operations in various modes. Some of those modes were shipping, seeing to the manufacturing of shipping to cocaine to the United States. Now, there was a large investigation about that, if you all recall, Maxine Waters and I guess it was Gary Webb, and what was that called, Steve? The do you recall the movie?
No.
Oh, Doug, do you know? I'm sorry.
No, I don't. No, I don't.
It's a recent movie that just came out about the CIA delivering crack cocaine to the inner cities of the United States, and the investigation. The way they do an investigation, folks, is they write the scope of the investigation. And the scope of the investigation was, did the CIA, was the CIA culpable in funneling crack cocaine into the inner cities? And the answer, I can tell you now, no, we did not. Out of Iran-Contra, out of those years, and this investigation was the 80s, we did not ship crack cocaine into the inner cities. We ship cocaine into the inner cities. What they made it into was whatever they wanted to make it into. So the scope of the investigation wasn't wide enough to say did we ship cocaine. So there's how they manipulate federal law, federal investigations. They write the scope of the investigation so that it actually fools the people of the United States and doesn't really attack the root issue.
Steve, just FYI, I believe it was Kill the Messenger that came out last year. The movie, is that what you're referring to, Chip?
It certainly is, Doug, yes. Thank you.
Okay, all right. And that an hour and 52 minutes, and thank you to Tammy who sent that in. Thank you. All right. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I think, too, Gene, the bottom line is that with all the gangbangers and everything, and I've watched years ago when I was really into talk radio and interviewing people. I was in Dallas, I think, during the holiday season, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, and that's not important. But I watched what I call Cadillac trunk deals. And I've been a firearms guy most of my life, owned firearm stores, indoor ranges, all types of firearms, belt fed, you name it. The bottom line is that I was surprised because as I watched, I think it was on the fourth floor, and just the amount of stuff these guys are passing off, And it wasn't just junk, okay, MAC-10s and MAC-11s, which are machine pistols pretty much. And in those days, the Uzi was hot. But what was surprising to me was just in talking to some of the people that are aware of that world, that it boils down to this. Does it not? If you can afford it, you can buy it. Obviously, in South Miami and stuff, you probably live in that world where you can get anything you want if you pay the price. So the idea of BLM and others, it doesn't matter who it is that's being turned loose in this country on the streets, there's no problem if the money is being supplied to them by people that want to bring the country down. They can buy anything and everything. And knowing that, Chip, how quickly, watching the headlines, seeing what you see on the internet every day, how quickly, based on your experience in Black Ops, seeing the false flags in this country, seeing the staged, if you will, or assaulted crime scenes, who in their right mind ever heard of allowing the press into, a suspect's home and taking all staged pictures? Not that the pictures were staged, but everything there was staged. And the reports of three tall white guys leaving the scene of the crime. What's your take on time? I like to do the bottom line and then work backwards so people can say, okay, when Chip Tatum says, here's what he sees, and this guy lived in this world, this guy interfaces with this world, people used to know that were operatives still, and I'd never ask you to say anything about anybody's name, and that would be crazy, but you know, as you talk to the world of, as you talk to the former operators in the former world you were part of, what's the, if you will, what's the consensus on timing? I promise you that will be the most asked email question that Doug gets or I get or we both get tonight.
You know, because with every op, with every action that we would produce back in my time, there was a reaction, and we were hoping on certain reactions. And those reactions weren't always what we expected. So we had to adjust our planning and do another op and hope that that second op adjusted that the reaction to where we needed it. So it's been taking more time than originally posted. But I'm going to tell you now, as fast-tracking as everything is, and the issue that you just brought up in this apartment in California, let me tell you something, folks. They left the passports in there. If the FBI was in there, they would have, and did their job, they would have taken those passports. Those passports would not be sitting on that desk in that home. That was the most absurd thing that I saw in the whole video. The two passports sitting there. So, you know, I'm going to call it, folks. I'm looking for an American spring.
And define that for people. Yep. Go ahead.
Sometime in late spring of this year. Sometime in late spring of this year. Of 2016.
What should people look for? And here's the deal. With your experience, you in the field as an operative, there were, you know, obviously you were trained, but you develop a sense because I'm still talking to you and you're alive and you're vertical on planet Earth. But what are the things that will signal to you that it's one of those, oh, no moments? I mean, if there are two or three things, what should people expect? And then that will tell them timing, because people always ask me the timing. I don't know, but the event determines the time. So what are the most, I would say, pertinent events that you would say, this thing's going down, days, weeks, or you already pretty much a spring, but I mean, what are the things that you would tell the listeners? And by the way, they're all over the world, 50, 60 countries. What should they look for? What is it that you look for? And what are the telltale fingerprints of not just that there will be more killings, more shootings, but what are the events that you'll know this thing's underway?
First of all, they need a bad guy. Okay, they need this bad guy out there, this bad group, this bad person, bad group, whatever, to use as the fall group that's going to cause new laws, state of emergencies, martial law. You know, I don't see martial law, and I'm going to tell you why I don't see martial law. But under martial law, and we talked about this years ago, under martial law, the military takes over. In our meetings, we talked about martial law versus state of emergency. In a state of emergency, the president of the United States maintains control of the United States, maintains control of Congress, and only has to report to Congress from time to time, and still maintains control of all the militaries and National Guards and reserve centers. Under martial law, which I see a lot on the internet, people talking about going into martial law, I don't see that happening because too much power is given up by the president to the military, and I don't see him wanting that to happen. Now, under martial law, you know, if you guys have heard a few of statements by Obama, he hasn't ruled out another term. And under state of emergency, he can have another term because he can suspend elections. So there's a lot moving in sly remarks. You don't see real heavy movement. You know that people, the Clinton fans are all the Clinton fans, the Bush fans are the Bush fans. But you don't see a lot of movement in the real political arena of anyone who's really a strong candidate. And you don't see a lot of support coming from the White House one way or another. These are small issues, but they're indicators. Other indicators is the I would say elevated, not elevated, but there are more and more of these attacks on United States soil. And as you see the number of attacks elevate on a monthly basis, you're going to see irrational on the part of the government, they're going to call it irrational moves on their part to abate this. And those are the two prime areas for me. Another prime area for me is when I was in Miami, when I was in that holding cell, that's the only place that the doctors here told me that an Asian parasite could have been introduced into my system that almost killed me. Had I been in the United States and been treated, I never would have been treated for that parasite, because they would have never checked for it. Down here, the doctors checked and they found it. They said that about a week after I got here, about 7 days before getting here, I had to be infected with it, and that hit right on the day that I was held in that holding cell by Homeland Security in Miami. So, you know, I see that as one move on my part against me, in not wanting me available to talk, available to warn. I see the rapid development of these false flags. I see the movement of our special forces troops into what they call the moderate rebel camps, in hopes that Russian bombers will kill some of our special forces men, causing a military reaction there. So there's just too much movement right now to even think that something big isn't going to happen by spring.
What about the, as you see this played out, over the years, a lot of the Russian defectors, and you've obviously had your contact with the different Russian agents and military and stuff, it's fascinating that now was it Ash Carter, who, you know, has got to be, in my opinion, the wrong guy for the SecDef, Secretary of Defense, is it not interesting that the number 200,000 soldiers of the U.S. may be put in there to, quote, take over ISIS? That's like a vampire being in control of the blood bank and asking people to come in and donate for the sake of all the homeless vampires. In other words, it's insanity. Do you believe, I think you and I talked about this off the show, the radio show, that there could be a second sinister reason for moving our troops into that battle, especially when you probably saw it today, Putin gave his field commanders autonomous fire control. Putin, he doesn't need to clear his actions with NATO headquarters, Brussels. He doesn't have to do anything. Does that say to you that we're getting that much closer? Because I've been monitoring, you know, Russia Today, Pravda, and all that stuff. People say, that's all propaganda. I said, what the blazes do you think everything on network news is in America? I said, at least they'll show pictures of what's really going on. So, number one question, what do you think about moving 200,000 men of the U.S. military into that theater? And number two, is it not a concern of yours that they could really be put into harm's way? Because it seems like that's ludicrous, especially in light of the fact that at any point within the last year, all of the supply lines could have been taken out, and our government knew about the 1,000 tankers selling illegal oil. They're probably clipping their share of the coupons. So what is your take on that specifically, moving 200,000 U.S. soldiers, fighting men and women, into that zone after doing nothing? Doesn't that seem a little phony?
It's a preparation for war. That's all it is.
Well, yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's a preparation for war. Look, as you said, those supply lines, the first thing you want to do in any war is cut logistics lines. So, you know, if they really wanted to do something with ISIS, whoever ISIS is, and I'm not a firm believer on the United States definition of who ISIS is, but if we really wanted to cut ISIS, you cut their money. You cut the oil supply lines and see to it. And those are easy bombing missions. Those are simple bombing missions. Not a boot on the ground needs to be for those. not with our satellite support, with our drone support and everything else. What I do see is I see a growing, we have the Western Alliance, now we see a growing Eastern Alliance that Russia's put together. You know, Syria folks, their joint venture partner in their oil fields is China. And so China has a vested interest in seeing that Assad stays in. China does not want to see Assad being taken over by ISIS or by the Free Syrian Army or anyone else. They want to maintain him in place because that guarantees the flow of oil to their country, and they use a lot of petroleum. So China has joined in the new Eastern Alliance. They've sent drones. They've sent drone pilots. And they've offered, according to my partner in Miami, who's Chinese and whose father is a government official, they have offered to provide a human fence along the Turkish border.
So a human
that's
fence.
That's a huge move.
You're talking about
and
troops,
then you have, of course. Yeah, that's exactly right. They've offered to put a human fence on the Turkish border.
How many men would that be, in just your estimation?
I'd say that would be about 200,000 also.
Okay. Again, let me just because I think this is critical. When you and I spoke, you know, a month ago, whenever it was, and by the way, the past is the past, but everything when we talked about the last time off the phone and then just our hour on the radio, but given the disdain for the military and the direct attack on the morale of the military, and I said, I don't think Spetsnaz was impressed with U.S. military having to, the Army having to wear red high heels so they could identify with the women. I mean, the idea of putting them into harm's way when Putin already gave autonomous, even nuclear control to his forward commanders, and so given that, is it a stretch of imagination to believe that knowing that there's a deal on the side, and I don't know the nature of the deal, I suspect there's a nature of the deal, you know, between the feigned animosity, do you see that as really a wise move in the theater of NATO? And most of the countries in NATO right now don't have any firepower outside of nuclear to challenge the Russians. So the Russians are saying, you guys putting fighters onto your front lines, that's not to bomb ISIS, that's to take us on. You want to take us on? We don't play by your rules. That's what I'm trying to ask you the question. You know, this group of miscreants would think nothing, would they, about putting a major part of the U.S. military that's been downsized into harm's way?
They would think nothing of doing it. Collateral damage towards their end. That's all that is.
Okay. So right now, if you were saying, you know, what I call mushroom cloud madness, what would be your signal that the thing's going to go nuclear in the Middle East and Turkey? You know, obviously the Russians are already firing cruise missiles from the Caspian, from submarines. They're bringing in their S-400. I mean, they're not putting rusty buckets onto the front lines. They're putting their best stuff, and that's because they know what they're going to be countering. Do you see this as Putin having totally checkmated NATO?
Not totally, but real close. And, you know, one other in that alliance is North Korea. And they're kind of a wild card when it comes to anything. You never know what they're going to do. Pakistan is another nuclear country that's in the new Eastern Alliance. So you have a nuclear alliance going on there. And, you know, Pakistan and India, you know, their issues there along with Pakistan and Turkey. And either one of those countries are wild cards with nuclear capabilities, which could really, really spark the fire.
Steve, can I jump in here and ask a question?
Sure, please do.
All right. Mr. Tatum, not too well, I think this is, what, three, 4 days ago, 5 days ago now, perhaps, Russia said that, well, right before they launched the cruise missiles, that they were actually bombing ISIS, or that they would have the potential or had the intent or would not fear to use tactical nuclear weapons against ISIS. Was that not a threat, not against ISIS, but against NATO and the United States, as really there's no need, as you pointed out, to use nuclear weapons or tactical nukes on ISIS themselves? So this was a veiled threat to the United States and NATO, perhaps?
Everything that Putin says is directed toward NATO. I can tell you that now. Everything he says. I worked counter him in the mid-80s. I was in Germany. Everything, and he was just an admin guy, but he worked at releasing prisoners, releasing spies, and so forth. And so we would read portfolios on all of the KGB men in the area. And let me, anything and everything that he says right now is directed at NATO and the NATO alliance countries. So the U.S. certainly is directed there too.
Doc, do you have another question?
No, I think that's really important to underscore here, because Steve, you know, you and I speak quite frequently, and we're looking really we're standing at the precipice of World War III, and I've long asserted that World War III was going to begin begin with Syria, in Syria, and this is exactly what we're seeing. I think everything else takes second or third, you know, stage to what's taking place in the Syrian area, and I think it's going to really, who cares what I think, but I can just see this ramping up of events, as Mr. Tatum had suggested here.
When your Chinese partner, and when he talks about what he sees over there, does he have a different viewpoint than you? You guys share commonalities, or because of, obviously, he's in a family of someone who's high ranking in China's upper echelon, what are his views as to what will spark and trigger? Now, you just said China's thinking to put a human chain along the border, and obviously they've got their high-tech weapons. What does he think right now? I mean, I don't know. You talk to him daily or every couple days, or?
No, I talk to him about twice a month. Import and export electronics into the U.S. So
at this point, let's say based on the... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, then, is he a believer in your same spring scenario?
He doesn't keep up with news. They don't talk much about it. They talk about China, and their okay. issue is only with China. And China really doesn't have an issue with the United States. They have an issue with their oil, and they want to guard that oil, and they want to do whatever they need to do to guard those oil fields. And Russia has promised them that an expansion of oil to them from the area once they gain ground there and start taking over other zones. And you know, that just makes sense. The expansion policy is there. And that expansion policy is what's checking the United States and NATO right now. NATO has their expansion policy, so naturally Russia is going to fire back with an expansion policy. Just a fact. You know, you look at Kazakhstan, which is just not far from the Turkish border. They have just last year kicked the United States out of there. That was our area that we used to logger personnel, military personnel, weapons and so forth into that country, and prepare them for the Afghanistan arena, and we'd had aircraft, arms, and personnel would be taken into their process, and then sent down into the Afghanistan area of operations. And last year, they were kicked, the Mantis base was closed because the Russians are now in control of that, the area of operations there now, and that base was closed. So you see this expansion policy playing out, and the only ones really expanding is Russia. All the United States is doing is huffing and puffing, putting their chest out, and throwing our men into harm's way.
Would you say, based on everything that you've seen, all the different administrations that you've served under, that basically, are you seeing the flat-out communists flood the United States with insurmountable, I would call it, by the way, I don't call it an immigrant invasion, I call it the invasion forces, the pre-invasion forces. It's not an immigration issue, it's an invasion issue, overwhelming the support. You know this, anybody that comes into this country, by the time they get established and everything, they get $35,000 to start with, $35,000 to start with. And just in the last week, we've got reports of different military bases flying Syrians in, and these guys don't, you know, come in buses, Gene, or excuse me, once they come in the planes, they get, you know, super treatment. They're going out, and this was an eyewitness report. I mean, they're being chauffeured around. Okay, so when you've got, let's just say this, your average Syrian blah 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 refugee, and he's getting chauffeured around, what would that say to you as an operative?
Well, what they do, they have charter flights, and they fill those charter planes, you know, 320 people, 320 refugees at a time. They bring them into a secure base area. They don't come with personal items or anything like that, so they have charter buses. They drive them into town, and they give them carte blanche on buying whatever they need. I'd say that they're building a huge problem in the United States of America. And it's building quickly, and that's why I say spring is probably a very, very good target time for issues. Because, listen, they don't know. They do not know who these people are that they're bringing in. It took me 2 years to get Delia, my wife, and my son is an American citizen, but to get her on a fiancé visa into the United States. But for some reason, if they're coming from the Middle East, it's done within 6 months. So you know that they can't do heavy background checks. They have no idea who these people are that are coming in. And I can tell you now, they're not good people that are coming in. I know a contact in Costa Rica. There are two Pakistani contacts there who basically bring people into Costa Rica, get them visas and into Costa Rica, move them to their operations in Canada, and then bring them down in the United States also. That's another. There are so many of these above-ground railroads, the refugee railroads, in effect, that aren't being checked. They aren't being held in check at all. And to give you an example, these two guys hold 12 passports in various names in various countries. Now, I talked to an official at the embassy in Costa Rica, and they didn't want to handle it. So that just told me who they were.
What's going price for a fake passport in their world?
$2,500.
That cheap?
That cheap. That gives you a Canadian passport.
Huh. And then, obviously, they build the background so it can withstand the scrutiny of all the checks?
Yeah, pretty easy. Well, actually, with the Canadian passport, they just go in and come right in. They don't have to, you know, there are no checks.
Well, since insanity rules the day, can you explain to the people, this is, and the listening audience all over the world, okay, what is it that, where's the disconnect that all of these people can get away with treason, murder, and every form of drug running, money laundering, and obviously under Clinton, I mean, that's where the Chinese got all their their throw weight in missile technology from the Loral Satellite Corporation. I remember doing that story in real time, and people just kind of scratched their head, burped, and said, it's no big deal. We had Bill Clinton give away the entire U.S. patent library for, I think, political donations. But just since you were so uniquely tied to that part of the world for a time, and MENA, Arkansas, etc., you know, I mean, what is it that, where is the disconnect? Here's the deal. Is everybody, period, and this is my feeling, everybody, period, in the mainstream media is on the payroll behind the scenes? Would you agree with that? Or at least the most prominent figures?
If there's something to be brought out by major media, first of all, it has to pass their legal department, okay? Now, legal departments in major media, these are huge attorney firms. And what do we have in these huge attorney firms? They're all very politically connected. And so there's that political process that keeps the major media from reporting the truth. Now, what is the truth? And why aren't our congressmen, why isn't our government handling this? Well, our government's behind it. And as you said, you know, these lapdogs sitting there, when you own the Department of Justice, when you own the federal judges, when you own the heads of all of these U.S. Mandates, the FBI, the Homeland Security, whoever it is, you control what is going to be charged, who is going to be charged, and what is going to let lie. And that's exactly what's going on. They own the Department of Justice. They own the U.S. attorneys. They own the investigative entities. What generals they didn't like, they kicked out and put lapdogs in. So that's where it lies.
Well, at this juncture in what's going on, you know, the president's supposed to come out with some new gun control mandate, executive orders. Do you see, and I don't know, Doug, we've got a couple minutes, do you see the American public now finally catching on? Because, I mean, we're seeing firearms and ammunition sales off the just off the charts. I talked to one from the biggest sporting goods wholesalers that sells to dealers across the country. He said they went from 1.5 to 2 million a day to 10 million a day, and they're one of the biggest, so you just multiply that. What is your take on the go for the gun situation? Because, again, you know, everybody says, well, there are so many hundreds of millions of guns in America, but when you import, you know, trained, and I say this, trained military capable assassins, and you give them the addresses, and they've got every form of thermal and night and real-time drone scanning, what is your take on the going for the guns?
Well, they're going to go after the guns. There's no doubt about that. That's the whole idea of these false flags. That's the whole idea of building America to support, because of all these loose laws on owning guns, which aren't loose at all, but they call them loose laws for owning and carrying weapons. They've built a platform to try to get the support, and that's how you do it. You have to get the support of America. So you build these platforms, you run these false flag operations to ensure that America's behind you, the majority anyhow, so that you can pass a law to take care of this. Look at 9/11. Look at what was taken away with that. Easy. That was an easy takeaway. And I think that the gun laws will be a little more difficult takeaway, but there's no doubt that he's going after them. There's no doubt in my mind he's going after him.
Mr. Tim,
like you said earlier...
I got to stop you. I apologize, Steve. We're at the top of the hour. We need to really to address this at the other side of the break. Can we do that? Because we
sure.
Are about to, okay, perfect. Mr. Tatum, thank you so much for your sacrifice of time tonight. I know it's not easy. Joe.
Just an incredible first hour, Steve and Chip. We'll be right back with Chip Tatum and Steve Quill on this Friday edition today, December 11th, 2015, of the Hagman and Hagman Report here on Global Star Radio Network. Stay with us.